Blood Loss Horrorcast, Episode 6. Yeah! Alright, this is Blood Loss Horrorcast, Episode 6. I am Blake.
And I'm Matt.
Said our names this week.
Yeah.
We're going to start off with some news. And the first one is that Universal Pictures is releasing a remake of The Wolfman, the classic 1933 or something.
I think it's 33.
Yeah. And normally I wouldn't really care, but it sounds like they really have a hold on what people are going to want from this. They had Andrew Kevin Walker write it, and he wrote Seven. And, you know, he did a fantastic script with that, I thought.
Yes, he did. Yes.
And the director is kind of a weird choice. His name's Mark Romanek. He did the movie 1 Hour Photo, and he's basically just done, other than that, it's pretty much music videos.
Well, 1 Hour Photo was, the making of it was pretty good.
Yeah, it was disturbing, but yeah. It was a very subtle movie. But, and you know, I wouldn't be that happy about it, but on Ain't It Cool News, one of the guys there talks to him regularly, and he said that this guy, you know, detests CG and hates that whole thing and likes doing it old school. And that's what this movie needs, because CG werewolves just do not work ever.
No, they don't.
So, I mean, it seems like this guy maybe has a sense of how to do this right. And I at least have high hopes for it.
Well, then again, with a man like Benicio as a star, you don't really have to do a lot of CG. That guy kind of looks like a werewolf already.
Yeah, just add a little bit of hair and you're there. But, yeah, the scheduled release date for that right now is November 14th, 2008, but that'll probably change.
Well, if we're around, then I guess we'll have to review that movie.
Yeah. I mean, the original Wolfman is one of my favorite of the original Universal Monster movies, so they have to do this one carefully, but, I mean, at least they're not doing, you know, the Mummy or whatever, all those bullshit movies.
Boris, shit, what's his last name?
Who?
The Boris guy.
Karloff?
Hey, there we go. Thank you.
He was the original Frankenstein.
Yeah. Well, was that Universal too?
Yeah.
That's what I was thinking, yeah.
All of those are.
Yeah.
And, I mean, there really isn't that much news this week, so we're just going to go over a couple of other things. Big news in metal kind of this week, I guess, is that Ozfest is going to be free.
Really?
Yes. So, I mean, it should be...
Well, hell, I'll go this year,
then. Yeah, I mean, the thing about it is that they're going to be taking on a bunch more sponsors, but the concert itself is going to be free, which I think is very cool, but it sort of hurts you in that I always like to get good seats for the main stage, and I don't know how you're going to be able to pull that off if everybody's gets equal chance and it's free. That's the first thing. And then also in the way that they worded their press release, it sort of made it sound like they were, you know, taking this big hit and they were going to give everybody this free concert. When actually it just means everybody else that plays the show is going to get fucked over, and Ozzy and Sharon are still going to make the same amount from all
most
the sponsors.
Likely. Well, the Woodstock guys did the same thing. They said they were going to take a bath, and then, as we all know, end up over time. Yeah. You're not going to be hurt at all.
They're not losing any money. It's just everybody else in the concert losing more money.
Well, the difference with Woodstock is, that was the thing, they couldn't get a lot of the people they wanted because they just didn't want to fork over that much money.
Yeah.
So who's playing Ozfest this year? Do you know yet?
They haven't released any names. I think the only ones they have locked up are probably the smaller bands. And the big rumor is Alice in Chains is going to play, but...
I'm confused. I'm pretty sure one guy's dead.
Yeah, I don't know who they have singing, like, standing in for Lane, but... Lane,
yeah. Well, Jerry Cantrell can just continue his solo career on big stage.
Yeah. And then, you know, there's rumors of Down playing...
That'd be pretty
and,
nice.
And Vinnie Paul's band, what is it called? I don't remember what it's called. His new band.
Wait. You're going to have Down and Vinnie Paul in the same?
That's the problem, is that I don't know if they'll be able to coexist this quickly, but the rumors are pretty heavy that both of those guys will be playing. And then there's other ones. Children of Bodom might play.
What about Ozzy?
He's going to play. I don't think it's going to be with Black Sabbath this year, hopefully, because... I love Black Sabbath, but I kind of wanted to see him do a solo show again.
Because my understanding is they play the same set every single year.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
They've added a couple. Like, they did Sweetleaf 1 year and whatever.
Do they ever play any of their older stuff from like Never Say Die and Technical Ecstasy? And
they'll throw in like one or two each year, but nothing. It's pretty much just the standards.
Oh yeah,
and yeah, I'd like to see a solo set, but you know, Black Label Society's probably gonna play, so they might not. Yeah, that's it for that. We can get back to horror movies. The last bit of horror news, just because there wasn't that much this week, is that if you go over to bloody-disgusting.com, you can see a pic of of the new Myers house from Rob Zombie's remake of Halloween. And it looks cool.
Is it?
Yeah, it looks pretty similar to the original. Maybe a little bit more worn down.
It shouldn't be that hard since it's a standard built house from the 50s.
Right, yeah. But, you know, it's just giving us a little bit of glimpse into maybe what it's going to look like. And it looks a little bit more worn down, which, you know, kind of seems like the direction he's taking the movie is just a little bit dirtier and grittier.
Yeah, which is understandable.
Yeah, but we'll see. Next, we have the horror tournament update. We are down to the final 8 movies in it. Do you want to give them the list of those?
Might as well. We got 1 vs. 4, which will be Halloween vs. Nightmare on Elm Street, the 3rd installment. And then we'll have 3 vs. 2, which is Halloween, the 2nd installment, vs. the original, A Nightmare on Elm Street. Then we got, a 1 vs. 5.
Yeah.
An upset. It would be Texas Chainsaw Massacre vs. Halloween 4. And I have a feeling it won. It was a real tight race, right?
No, not really, actually.
Oh, which one was like a 8-8 for a long time?
New Nightmare versus Freddy vs.
Jason. Okay, that's what it was. One. That's right, it was an ass-whooping. That's why I was surprised. Yeah. I think people were just doing it so a remake wouldn't go up against the original.
Probably. I was surprised, though.
Yeah, I was surprised by that, too. That was a good-ass-whooping. Sorry. Yeah, because it's the next one, where it's Freddy vs. Jason vs. New Nightmare, which I was really surprised that Freddy vs. Jason did that well, because
I thought it was gonna take it, actually. Even though I had it listed as a lower seed on my predicted thing for the actual bracket, I had it winning just because it's newer.
Yeah, more people,
most new horror fans like that movie better than New Nightmare. But
I'm glad to see that it didn't win. No,
yeah, New Nightmare is a much better movie. Yeah.
And then there'd be Friday the 13th is what it's going up against.
Yeah,
so all the originals have made it, no surprise there,
right?
So,
one thing that's interesting is that Nightmare on Elm Street, there's 7 films to start, and now when we're down to 8, there's 3 of them still in it.
Yeah.
So, and I think that's fair, because I think that series is the one that holds up the best. As far as consistently being good films, I think that one is the best.
I have to second that notion.
Yeah. But, no real huge upsets other than the Texas Chainsaw Massacre remake losing.
Which probably isn't that big of a surprise if you want to think about it.
Well, I thought it was a good movie. And
I thought it was a good movie, but
it got beat by Halloween 4, right?
Yeah.
Which is one of the better Halloween movies, but it's not anywhere near as good as 1 or 2.
Pardon my ignorance, but this is the return of Michael Myers, right? 4?
God. It's, they're hard to keep straight. It's 1, 2, 3, Season of the Witch.
I'm pretty sure 4 is the return of Mike
Myers.
Yeah,
Return. It's Return, Return, Revenge, Curse, I think.
Okay.
That is the order.
Hell. It's like they planned that out or something.
Yes. And that's pretty much it for the horror tournament.
Yeah, that's can't say much more.
Go onto our MySpace page at myspace.com/bloodlosshorrorcast and cast your vote from tomorrow until next Sunday for these rounds. And then once we get down to the final 2 movies, that one will be up for 2 weeks. And so try to get a ton of votes for that.
So should we look in the future and see which one of those are going to be? I think it's going to be Halloween versus Friday the 13th.
I think it's going to be Halloween, A Nightmare on Elm Street. Oh, you mean for
the
final?
In the
two?
Final, yeah.
For the final 2?
Yeah.
I think it's going to be Halloween, Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Okay. I think it's just going to be Halloween versus Friday the 13th.
You think so?
I just assuming, because...
Yeah. It's possible. Friday the 13th hasn't done that well in its
that's what I'm,
matches, but...
That's what I'm going for, is...
But,
eventually, Law of Averages will say it has to do good.
Yeah, but I think that's the series that's least loved by horror fans. Just because there's really, in that series, there's no one movie you can stand out and say, that's a perfect horror movie. Whereas with the rest of them, A Nightmare on Elm Street, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and Halloween, all of those original movies are perfect.
That they are, but... I don't know.
Friday the 13th is good, but it's kind of, it's just, they're pretty much all just campy fun.
That they are. I'm not going to argue with you there. I mean, I would vote for Halloween versus Texas Chainsaw Massacre just because, and I'd probably have, that'd be a good question. It'd be interesting to see who wins, but I'm just trying to stall time since we don't have any news.
But that's about it for this week. Just, go vote on our MySpace page, and if you have a chance, tell your friends to vote. It would be cool. I like to have lots of votes.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's about it. Next up, we are going to have the Song of the Week, which is by a band called Two West, with their song Dried Advance, and then we're going to talk about the video that they did by one of our friends named Jim on our MySpace page. So, yeah, check out the song Dried Advance. Okay, that was the song Dried Advance by the band Two West. We want to thank our friend Jim on MySpace for pointing that song out to us. You can listen to the song over at myspace.com/2westnation. That's the number 2, West Nation, no spaces. And we looked at the video for that song because Jim, our friend, is an effects guy. And he did the effects in that music video. And, what did you think of them?
I thought they were pretty good.
Yeah, I like... I like it when people understand that they have budgetary constraints and they work within those, you know, and they use that as a part of the video so that, you know, he just did simple effects, yeah. but they were effective because he didn't try to go beyond his means.
Correct.
Yeah.
It's just a good, all he needs is a little bit of blood. And...
yeah. Because I hate it, like, in horror movies when people try to make, you know, a big budget $100 million movie when they got a couple thousand dollars. And it just comes out terrible. You don't try to make something like that. You use what you have to... you know, tell a story. And I think they did a good job of that with this video. And if you want to see that, you can go over to the myspace.com/2SNation and check it out. We will maybe have a review of some of the movies that Jim has done effects on.
Be looking forward to it.
Yeah. Next, we will have a review of the movie Maniac.
Which coincidentally has some amazing effects in it, too.
Yes, it does.
Isn't that Savini?
Yes, yeah. Tom Savini.
That guy.
One of the greats.
And he had... he is the best special effects we'll get to is him actually involved in it.
Yes. So, coming up, the review of Maniac.
You are about to face the screen's most horrifying challenge.
I see something.
You are about to face... Maniac. Tonight won't be like other nights. Tonight, a madman's out there, and you will know horror more real than you could ever imagine. Maniac. He'll tear the life out of you. An analysis film's release. No one under 17 admitted.
Maniac, maniac, maniac of love. Or something like that.
Do you want
to... can we keep... that's the only part of the song I know.
All right.
I can just keep singing, maniac, maniac of love. Do-do-do.
All right. We are talking about Maniac, the 1980 movie directed by William Lustig and starring Joe Spinell.
Who basically did everything else on the movie.
Yeah, and he is awesome. This is a movie that is pretty much, it was for a long time considered a really disturbing movie, and I think it is pretty...
rightly so, I'd consider it disturbing.
Yeah, disturbing in a lot of ways. And it's actually still banned in a few countries.
Really? I know it has an X rating, or it did when it came out, at least.
I'm not sure if it's because of it's still, you know, it's still so disturbing, or just because they didn't feel like unbanning it yet, but as far as I know, it's still banned in a few countries. But this is basically the story of a serial killer, and it sort of starts with his first kill, I believe, is the way that they lead you to, at least the way the police believe it.
Oh, okay, But because he had that mannequin in his bed already with some hair on it.
Yeah, well, I think that was his first kill.
His first kill? Okay, yes. Sorry, that's what you said. Okay, I thought... maybe, go on.
Yes, they don't actually make it clear if he's killed before, but they start with this first killing of this killing spree that takes place throughout the rest of the movie.
Yeah.
And the man's name is Frank Zito, and he is a tenant, or not a tenant, he is a landlord for a... apartment complex, it makes it seem.
Yeah.
Because they had a set of keys up on the wall. So that's what I got out of it.
And everyone knew his name.
Yeah.
And they were friendly to him.
Yeah.
And New York friendly doesn't happen.
Yeah. And he basically is just sort of drifting further into insanity. And he has his multiple personality disorder. And he believes sort of that...
his mother.
Each woman that he kills is... has some similar traits to his mother, I guess.
Yeah.
And he's sort of loving to his mother, but then also he kills her.
Yeah.
He tries to. Which maybe, they don't actually make it clear, but it seems like maybe he did kill his mother when he was younger.
Yeah. The whole movie, nothing's really clear. That's what was really good about it.
Yeah. And this story is basically sort of, if you took, you know, that manic serial killer like Freddy or Jason or whatever and made it real, this is sort of what this story is. It's like... what a real serial killer goes through each day. And I loved that part in the beginnings where it was just him tying his shoes and things like that. And when he got the hooker, sort of the awkwardness before they started. I thought that was really cool because they showed, you know, this guy's this manic serial killer that we always see on screen, sort of, he has those same awkward moments. And, you know, he is still human. Well. So... I thought that was the most disturbing part of it, is that this guy really is human, and he sort of has to...
and he liked to have sex with his clothes on. That was pretty disturbing.
Yeah. And it starts off on sort of POV style through this looking binoculars thing on a beach, and it really tries to feel like Halloween in the beginning.
Yeah.
But he goes out on this beach and kills this guy and his girlfriend. And then we see him screaming, waking up, and he has a mannequin laying next to him with the woman's head on top of it. Not her head, but her scalp.
Yeah, yeah. Which is, I don't know why they just took the scalp.
Yeah, he scalps all of his victims for some reason.
I was thinking that it was going to be, he's going to take body parts.
Yeah.
Like kind of like sort of May. Like May. Yeah, but it was just the scalp, just the hair.
Yeah.
And where did he get the mannequins from?
I don't know. They don't make it clear, but they do have one really cool scene where he's walking through the streets of New York and he's looking at all the mannequins and sort of picking out the ones that he wants. That was really creepy.
Yeah.
But we sort of continue on with him as he's slipping further and further into this insanity where he's got these multiple personalities, and one of them is the normal guy screaming at him that, you know, you're going to get caught.
Yeah.
And, you know, they all know about you. And then the other one is the insane guy who does all the killings.
Yeah. It's a good battle between them.
Yeah. And I loved during it, sort of each kill, like the first one started with no music whatsoever.
Yeah.
And then as each kill went on, the music kept getting ramped up and up and up. And then on the last kill, the music was just so loud. It was louder than anything else on the screen. And I thought that was a really cool, like, direct representation of how insane he's getting.
And also, if he didn't, it was all in his head.
Yeah.
It used to just be monologues inside his head.
Yeah.
And as the movie went on, he was actually verbalizing the multiple personalities.
Yeah.
So everything, like you said, the whole movie just...
And at the end, we actually see what's going on inside
his head. Yeah. Everything culminates
to
complete insanity.
Yeah. And the story sort of starts off... It starts off basically just following him. And then as the movie progresses, we start taking on the other characters, his victims. We start take on, which I didn't like as much. I thought it was more disturbing to be in the mindset of the serial killer than of the victims, which is the traditional horror movie, right? Which is where you follow the victims and the serial killer is just stalking them.
Yeah.
I thought it's more disturbing where the serial killer is your hero. So.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I was rooting for that one lady in the bathroom to die, the nurse.
Yeah.
I was rooting for her to die.
One of the big problems with this movie is that every actor other than Joe Spinell is terrible. And those two nurses in particular were the worst actresses in the world.
Yeah.
Granted, they had terrible dialogue to deal with, because for some reason the nurses walk out of the hospital and they have the conversation about the serial killer, and then one of them gets stalked by the serial killer.
Yeah.
Right away.
It was right across the street.
Yeah. And it was just kind of a ridiculous setup, but, and the two actresses delivered it terribly.
That's why I was rooting for her to die.
Yeah. But, that's not really the point, because most of the movie we're just following this guy inside the serial killer's head.
Yeah.
And I thought, Joe Spinell was fantastic in it, because he has to be all of these different personalities, and he did them all perfectly.
He changed.
The transitions were like.
Yeah.
Seamless. It was amazing. And that's really where the whole what this movie's about.
They had an awesome special effect.
Yeah. And we see a few times in this movie where this guy actually could have gotten the girl legitimately.
Yeah.
And then he just chooses not to. And I don't know. I don't really understand, you know, why exactly, but I guess it's just because this guy's insane.
Yeah. And it usually sums everything up.
Yeah.
Because he could have banged a pretty hot lesbian photographer, at least bisexual.
I know.
Yeah. At least that's what I...
And he's the ugliest man alive.
But he's
not alive anymore, but he was the ugliest man alive.
He's just your big Italian guy from Brooklyn or the Bronx.
Yeah, he looked like a big, dumb, retard guy. But
that's nice of you.
I don't know. He was not a good-looking
dude.
It's
equal opportunity nowadays.
Right. But, yeah, I don't know if I really have anything more to say about this movie. I thought it was really well done. The effects were great.
Yeah, I think we should break down the kills, special effects. The first one that really comes to mind, the awesome special effects, is the hooker. When he scalps her.
Yeah.
And you see the brain, and then he...
Yeah, there's this really long scene where he's strangling her.
Yeah, that was...
It's really drawn out, and I've never strangled anybody, but it's probably more realistic to how long it takes, because normally in movies you just strangle them, and then in a couple seconds they're dead.
Like the pillow, like 3 seconds of the pillow over the head will kill anything. And she kept screaming and screaming, no one, and then he just walked away with her. That was the only truly leap
Yeah, that was a stretch where a guy goes in with a hooker and then comes out with a hooker-sized object inside a plastic bag. And
walks home with it.
Yeah.
You get someone pass and says, hey, you Christmas shopping?
Yeah.
Yep. Well, actually, that was a mannequin.
Yeah, it actually wasn't the hooker, but it was...
But you assumed it was the hooker the whole time until it was the mannequin. But where did the hooker... The pimp, you would have think, because...
Yeah.
I was expecting a taxi driver moment where just Harvey Keitel would bust out and just start shooting and then all hell would break loose.
Yeah.
And then the best kill, as we alluded to earlier, was Tom Savini. He was a disco guy. He had a woman.
A disco stud.
Yeah.
With his awesome mustache.
Hey.
Back in the 70s, Tom Savini could get any chick.
I could see why, because then... You know, they're having sex in the back seat. Good old Joe comes in. And anyways, they try to go away. And
it was creepy. There were shots of him where he was looking through the windows and just staring at him. That was really like...
Yeah. And then good old Tom just wanted some poo-tang and he didn't really care.
Yeah.
But he got what was coming to him with a buckshot.
Yeah.
About two feet away, you would assume.
He dove up on top of the hood and then just shot a shotgun straight through into Tom Savini's head, which is really satisfying because of watching The Hitcher a couple weeks ago where Sean Bean got shot in the face with a shotgun and just fell over.
Yeah.
But in this is really what happens when you get shot in the face with a shotgun, which your head just explodes everywhere.
Yeah. It's just like if anyone's ever shot a watermelon. Was it a watermelon? Do you know?
I don't know how they actually did it. I didn't look into it.
It seemed like the way it exploded and all the stuff came out. It was like if you ever shot a watermelon, that's what happens. It was awesome. It was like, wow.
And you could tell that they didn't have a huge budget for this movie, but Tom Savini, being the master that he is of effects, really pulled it off, and it was pretty amazing looking.
And I guess we can go in the culmination of the film is probably the best one, is when the mannequins come alive and decide to kill Frank Zito.
All the mannequins come alive and are all the victims from the rest of the movie that we've seen. Because he scalped them and put their clothes on them. And in his mind, they are the real women.
Yeah.
Because it's sort of... It does have a similar overtone to May, where he sort of feels like he's capturing these women. He thinks they're perfect as they are right now, and he doesn't want them to age or change or leave him, so...
Yeah, because you can keep it forever.
Yeah, he keeps them forever.
Yeah.
And they come alive and kill him. But then, as the cops come in and discover him, we see that he had just killed himself.
Well, not really.
Yeah, because apparently in the 80s, cops didn't feel it was necessary to check your pulse before just leaving.
I think every cop in America, it's the same in, 2000s. It's just like, we'll walk in and get some blood on you. I guess you're dead. But it's the scene as when he got decapitated. I thought that was one of the coolest things I've
ever
seen.
Yeah.
When the mannequins ripped his head off by gouging.
Yeah, it's very similar to in Dawn of the Dead, the effects that Tom Savini did there. Where the guy gets his guts ripped open. But it's him actually getting his head pulled off, and it looks very good.
Yeah. It was bloody.
Yeah.
Which I guess probably would happen. I don't know. One of these days, we're going to have to go out and try this strangling and ripping his heads off to see how well Tom Savini actually did it. But he gives all his credit to his Vietnam tour, Tom Savini.
Really?
That's how he knew your head exploded like that when you got shot in the face.
I did not know that.
Yeah. Because supposedly, he's a Vietnam vet. But, so was George Bush and John Kerry.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right. That's about all I have for this movie. What would you give it, 1 out of 10?
I'd give it probably an 8. I enjoyed it.
Yeah. I'd probably give it a 7.5 or 8. It's not perfect, but it really is a good, disturbing movie. And if you haven't seen it, you should definitely check it out.
The only thing I have, question-wise, is did he eat that woman's brain, the hooker? Was it a Hannibal moment?
No, I don't believe so.
Oh.
Because you didn't actually see her brain. You saw her skull.
Well,
so he could have cracked it open, I guess. But,
he went down and was doing something to her head.
Yeah.
Like Hannibal did in the very end when he was eating the cheeks.
Oh, yeah, that's true. He might have, I think he was might have been licking blood or something.
Licking blood?
Yeah.
Which Hannibal does also.
Yes.
Huh. Where are all these Hannibal mentions, you wonder?
I don't know. Coming up next, we have Rob's video game segment and then the review of Hannibal Rising, the new movie.
And this is Rob for Bloodloss Horrorcast. I guess not a segment. It's called Video Gore, anyway. Today's segment, I was thinking about talking about an older game series known as Splatterhouse. Splatterhouse was a really, really cool game. Let me take you back a little bit. Splatterhouse came out about 88. It was made by Namco. And it wasn't necessarily your standard, you know, games in that day that were horror-themed were just kind of like regular games. They just looked scary and featured weird stuff. Splatterhouse was different that it actually freaked out people with shocking imagery and little jump moments and stuff like that. It first came out in the arcades, of course. It came out in the arcades here in America and was quickly banned from arcades. So pretty much the only way you got to play the arcade game here in America was if you had a arcade owner or a 7-Eleven guy who just didn't give a shit and had the game anyway. The game, it's unique. See, the premise of the game is you got Rick and Jennifer, two college students that are dating each other, and they're going to visit the professor that lives at, West Mansion, basically the same mansion from Reanimator, from H.P. Lovecraft in the movie. There's lots of little hard jabs like that in the, not really references in the game. For instance, the Splatter House is West Mansion, stuff like that. Along the way, Rick finds a mask, puts it on. It's a ancient Celtic mask of, ooh, boogie boogie. It basically looks cool, and Rick puts it on. And he gets cursed, wakes up, Jennifer's gone, and he's drawn to the house. There's your story. The mask is supposed to be an ancient Celtic or Mayan mask, like I just said, but it's really just a hockey mask. They're obviously going for the he looks like Jason thing in the original game. Being that Rick did look a lot like Jason, he was a big hulking bulk, that big hulking, bulky monster man wearing a hockey mask with a shaved head. It's an outfit that looked vaguely like, God, I'm brain farting heavily today. It makes for good internet radio, don't you guys think? Well, boobies. Doesn't everyone like boobies? Yeah, let's talk about boobies now. Anyway, coveralls. It looks like he's wearing coveralls. Anyway, the premise of the whole mask and all that, a lot of people think he's just, they were just basically they were tying together scary-looking images, but the ancient cursed mask is actually referential to a horror movie from the 60s called The Mask, long before the Jim Carrey comic adaption. Basically, it was about a man who had a Mayan mask that made him do bad things when he put it on, a cursed mask. I think it's 60s, maybe 50s, when the movie came out. The gameplay of Splatterhouse is pretty straightforward. It's side-scrolling. You got one button for jump, one button for attack. It's a beat-em-up game, similar to Bad Dudes, being that, you know, you kind of jump over obstacles and punch and beat up monsters. Unfortunately, unlike Bad Dudes, Rick doesn't stop and say, "I'm bad!" every 5 minutes, which would be awesome. My cat's running around in the background, if you guys can hear that, over the loud noises I make on the microphone because I'm a heavy talker. The game had a lot of interesting, one of the more notable monsters you see early in the game is these corpses hanging from ropes. They'll be in the background, and they'll spit acid up toward you, stuff like that, you know, as a obstacle. But sometimes they'd come down on these ropes, and you'd have to hit them, because, you know, if they landed, they'd knock you back or whatever. And if you killed them, they fell in the pile of guts on the ground. You have to wait for the puddle of gore to clear up first, or you get hurt. And in fact, the way the game was, the reason it's called Splatterhouse, the zombie walks up, you hit it, gushy splatters everywhere. If you've got a weapon, say you pick up a 2x4, you hit it, the zombie will fling toward the background and splatter across the background. Stuff like that. It was very gory for its day. Really want to say the first overly gory game ever. I think Abaddox has his beat, but Abaddox is a space shooter where he shot aliens and they splatted. But this was just like over-the-top gory, which was kind of unheard of at the time. One really neat thing to bring up about the game is every time you fought a boss, it would have that last scare moment after you thought it was dead. It'd be one last attack with a kind of a violin-y noise playing. Really kind of took you off guard. If it hit you, you still died. Some of the bosses, one of the more notable bosses to me was the second level where you fought a possessed room, where basically it's a poltergeist in the room and it's throwing furniture at you, and the only way you can survive is fend off the furniture attacks, which is really cool. And of course the last scare moment of that is when the chandelier just comes crashing down after you think you're done, and you know, like I said, it'll still kill you, and that's all you can do is jump out of the way. The game is really hard. It's really tricky. Being that, like, you beat a level. Most games, you beat a level. When you start a new level, you've got a full life meter. Not so much. At most, you got one little point of life left given back to you. That was it. One interesting part of the game is there's a, I think he's level 3. Yeah, level 3. The boss of level 3, he's known as the Ghibli Man. I don't really know where that name came from. That's what everyone calls him. Basically, he's wearing a burlap sack over his head, reminiscent of Jason in Friday the 13th, Part 2, which, of course, it was a pillowcase in Part 2, but the image is there. And he has two chainsaws in his hands, and he's freaking hard. He jumps around, and he's very unique. He's got a cool look to him. Very hard. Right before you get to him, you find a shotgun. It's really best to try to wail him with that shotgun before you get sawed down. He's a very tricky boss. And uniquely enough, when you get to the end of the game, most games, you know, you saved a girl. You know, you get out. Everything's good. No. Jennifer still dies. In fact, you have to kill Jennifer. Jennifer's little ghost comes up, and she turns all evil monster-y where it's too late for her, and she's one of the last bosses. And you have to kill Jennifer. So basically, when you win the game, basically, Rick gets out alive. That's it. There's no happy ending. It's just he gets out, which was really cool for its day, because especially at that time, every game had a happy ending, no matter what. Double Dragon 2, where it started off with Marianne getting killed. At the end of it, she got resurrected. The girl always survived. Not so much in this game. One of the reasons the game got banned in U.S. arcades was the boss of level 4 is a upside-down floating cross, which was really strong religious imagery, especially for late 80s, early 90s America. You know, most of these things were sitting in a suburb somewhere, and that was just blew people's minds. It was basically a giant upside-down floating cross with floating heads around it. Later on, when the game got made for home systems, it got made for the NEC PC Engine, or TurboGrafx-16 over here in America. I think it also got made for a home computer system. I forget the name of it, though. It's supposed to be a more accurate, I bet, the best home conversion of the game so far. But the home versions, the PC Engine version in Japan was pretty much straightforward, straight adaption, no really changes except for a technology difference in where the TurboGrafx just wasn't as powerful as arcade software. But the TurboGrafx-16 engine here in America, I'm screwing up my words, they had to make some changes. First off, Rick's cursed mask, which is, you know, just a hockey mask, they made it red with black markings on it. Basically, it was done, obviously, to avoid any possible legal problems with Paramount with Friday the 13th. Not to mention, Friday the 13th game hadn't been out very long at that point, so I think it's just a safety precaution. Not to mention, the boss of level 40, Upside Down Cross, I mentioned, he was changed to just a giant floating head. And that was obviously to keep the outrage down. The game did really well. In fact, it was one of the only really good-selling games for the TurboGrafx-16 in America. I mean, the PC Engine did amazing in Japan, but over here it just barely moved units at all. I'm surprised it lasted as long as it did over here. Drinking a little juice there. Eventually, it got a sequel, and it was straight. I'm getting ahead of myself. Namco made another game for the Nintendo or Famicom in Japan, called Splatterhouse Wankaputi. It's got some crazy Japanese name. I can't really remember. Basically, it means like silly graffiti or something like that. And basically, it's a super deformed version of Splatterhouse, but more of a platforming game. And it's got the horror theme to it, but it's a straight-up parody. Being that Splatterhouse was really popular in Japan, and here's a parody game. And the game itself, it's really weird because it starts off with Rick being dead and lightning hitting his gravestone, and he gets out. And, of course, you're off to rescue Jennifer. And the levels, there's one boss where you have to fight. It's a ballerina. And she's dancing for Rick and during the cinema, and he farts. And that infuriates her, and he has to fight her. Stuff like that. It's just really much of toilet humor stuff. I love it. When you get to the end of the game and beat the game, turns out the whole thing is a movie, and Rick, Jennifer, everyone's okay. It's just a silly little game, but it's part of it. But yeah, they made a sequel to the original Splatterhouse, obviously Splatterhouse 2, and it was straight for the Sega Genesis, Mega Drive in Japan, everything, blah, 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 who cares. That was the only system it came out on, and it was a straightforward sequel. Basically, premise was the mask had been talking to Rick, telling her he could still save Jennifer, this, that, that, and he goes back to the West Mansion to rescue, try to rescue Jennifer, even though she's dead, and he's depressed. Of uniqueness, they changed the look of the mask to be more of a skull face. So basically, the game looks similar. In fact, it almost looks like a direct adaptation of the original Splatterhouse game, graphically, being that everything is just great looking. But yeah, the mask is a skull mask now instead of being a vague hockey mask-ish mask. The bosses are... The game's not too... It's a good sequel. It's a very good sequel to Splatterhouse. It's just, it's so similar to Splatterhouse. It's almost hard to really keep up with where the differences are. But you beat the game, lo and behold, Jennifer's still alive, and you defeated a monster that was disguised as Jennifer, and you rescue Jennifer, destroy West Mansion. It's all good. The day's been saved. Rick and Jennifer are together again. Good stuff. Along the lines of Monsters Look Out For, there's several disfigured, like severed hand bosses you have to fight. Not bosses, I'm sorry. Just standard monsters. And they're an obvious reference to Ash's hand from Evil Dead 2. And there's also a girl that's like a ghost, witchy girl that looks a lot like Reagan from The Exorcist. Aside from that, the monsters are still kind of status quo. Creatively, it's not that different from the first Splatterhouse, but it's a solid game still. And then about a year later, Namco came out with Splatterhouse 3, which was once again a Sega Genesis straight game. And this was one of the first games to get a rating. It was when Sega had their own rating system before there was a rating system put in place, and it was, of course, for mature audiences. And at the time, it was one of the games alongside of Doom and Mortal Kombat that was used in those hearings to get a rating system for games, proving that, you know, there needed to be something to be done about games meant for older audiences, but kids still having access to them. Well, the game 3 starts off with Rick and Jennifer. They've been happily married for years. They've got a child. For some reason, live in a mansion. I don't know. You figure after two adventures in a mansion, they just have a nice little condo somewhere. But no, they have a mansion. And the game opens up with great cinematics of the evil spirits entering the house using digitized video, which at the time was still a new thing. It looked great. Basically, Jennifer and their son gets kidnapped by the monsters. Rick has to go back in the house to go whoop some monster ass and get him. The game is a little bit of a difference. It's got more of a... Remember, you know how, say, Double Dragon is different from Bad Dudes, as in you got more playing field to walk up and down on? It's a lot like that. Not to mention, it's a little non-linear, as in there's some levels that are just not linear at all. And as far as power-ups go, the hockey mask now looks a little bit more crazy than it did in 2. Kind of hard to describe, just kind of looks like a mask, face. It's like a face to it. It's really kind of hard for me to describe, put into words. But you can power up, like, you have a meter that you can charge up, and you can do with a button combination, and Rick will morph into a Super Rick, where it's like powers of the mask on whatever, and the mask has long tentacle-esque dreadlocks, and Rick is now Hulkish looking, whereas in he's much larger, much more muscly, and just wearing a pair of tattered pants. But, and while he's super powered, Rick has much, he's more stronger, obviously, but he also has all these extra moves he can do, like a pile driver and stuff like that. Adds to the playability of the game. The game's a lot longer, and some of the levels are actually, there's nothing to tell you ahead of time, but depending on how long it takes you to beat some of the levels, depends on which ending you'll get, which I'll go into in just a minute. But one of the most notable bosses of the game is one of the levels is inside Rick and Jennifer's son's room, and you're fighting basically monster toys and all that on top of the zombies. Well, the boss is a giant teddy bear, and it's digitized, so it literally looks like a teddy bear. It's not some render. And as you're fighting this monster teddy bear, bits and pieces of the fur are coming off, and you're seeing bloody guts and gore underneath. And by the time you got him about dead, it's just a giant gory mess walking around. It's visually very cool, even to today's standards. I'm still impressed by it after all this time of playing video games. When you get to the end of the game, the boss is the mask itself, as in the mask is the one controlling the evil this whole time. Everything is basically, it's the mask's doing. It's not some secret devil or whatever. And so you have to have a one-on-one fight with the spirit that's behind the mask up on the roof of the mansion, which is kind of hokey because the render of Rick never removes his mask, and you still have all the mask abilities. So it's just kind of odd to me that you're fighting the mask wearing the mask. Figured he'd just slam his head up against the wall a few times, cuss, and say, "God damn it! Just take the fucking thing off. Jesus, piss on it." And that's what I do. I take the mask off, kick it around on the ground, piss on it, have a beer, go watch some cartoons. Leave the mask out. You know, the idea is not put the mask back on. It's causing all this trouble. You know, I've had to go rescue my woman twice. This is the third time. Now he's got my kid. Just because this is a great mask to keep around. Look at it. At parties, I like to put it on. And the guests are intact. Sure, all hell breaks loose. I put this fucking mask on, but you know, it's a really cool mask. It's really worth the saving my wife every time I put it on. Anyway, when you beat the game, depending on the certain levels and the time limit you beat them in, this is where it kind of gets neat. You beat those levels at certain times. There's four different endings. One, the first ending is the obvious. You beat those levels of time limits perfectly, and you get a super happy ending. Rick gets his wife and Jennifer. They get their asses out of the fucking house. I assume they got a downtown condo because, shit, I'm tired of mansions by now if I was them. And everything's all hunky-dory. That's the only good ending. One ending, if you do worst on those time limit levels, like I said, there's no indication you have to beat this level a certain time, so it's really kind of tricky. If you do the worst amount of time on it, Rick gets out, both Jennifer and the kid's dead, and he's, once again, God damn it, lost my family. The other ending is where it's mixed. Depending on your time, you'll either rescue Jennifer and the kid dies, or you rescue the kid and Jennifer dies. Either way, you have to really hustle through this game if you want to get the good ending where Rick still gets some nookie and gets to play football with his kid on the weekends. Namco had made some noise about making a new Splatterhouse for PlayStation 2, a 3D game. That game never saw the light of day, unfortunately. More unfortunately for me, because I'd really like to play a new one. Guys, here it is. Over 10 years since the last one, I played on emulators and stuff a lot. Hold up, lighten up a cigarette. Classy. But the mask pops up time to time again in Namco games. Like in one role-playing game, the mask popped up as a secret item you could have that had negative effects on you if you used it, as well as the positive effects. It was also in a Namco fighting game, which I can't remember the name offhand, where you could wear it and similar ideas. Basically, the mask is stuck around, and Namco obviously still has it and thinks about it. I wonder if they'll ever make a new game. According to sources, Namco plans to put all three Splatterhouse games on Nintendo Wii's Virtual Console, being that obviously the first one on TurboGrafx-16, and then 2 and 3 for the Sega Genesis channel. That's really cool to me, because those games are hard to get. They've got enough noise made about them that even this day, you can't walk into a used game store. You're going to have a hard time finding one of those games, especially a TurboGrafx-16 game, because TurboGrafx-16 anything is hard to get your hands on. I mean, you can do eBay, but you know you're going to get sniped, because there's always those lousy eBay snipers with nothing better to do than sit by their computer and jerk off to porn and ruin your auction. God damn it, I wanted that TurboGrafx-16. Anyway, I'm not mad. But yeah, that's it. I don't really have any game to think to tell you guys to be on the lookout for. Like I said in a prior segment, horror games are kind of the last things considered for new systems. Although I believe there's still a few coming out for the PS2. Their names escape me right now. And of course, PC games. There's always games, horror-themed games coming out on it, even though right now it's more morbidly themed fantasy games. So take what you can give. Anyway, thanks for listening, and back to Blake and Mike.
Is your name Hannibal Lecter?
Yes.
Do you have any guilty knowledge of the death of Paul Mormon?
Guilty knowledge?
Limit your responses to yes or no.
No. It's vanilla. It reacts to nothing. It's monstrous.
Well, thanks, Rod, for your video gore segment. And that was a clip from Hannibal Rising, the new movie, which I hope to God never, ever, ever comes out to video. So it none will. Of you have to see it.
And then but, we're probably going to get 5 editions of it, too.
Yeah.
All those, fuckers.
It's a horrible, horrible movie. But I'll break down the plot for you. The plot's a little different if any of you have actually read the book. But it opens in 1944 in Lithuania, and Hannibal Lecter's with his family. And
at Lecter Castle.
At Lecter Castle in Lithuania. And what happens is the Blitzkrieg is happening, which actually happened in 1942, but they made it... It really doesn't understand in the movie. But in 1944, they have to run away, which in the books, they've already ran away in 42. So then they're in the cottage, and then some... Not really... The Russians come, and their tanks, and then the Germans attack the Russians, and then somehow... Hannibal Lecter's whole family dies, except for him and his sister, Misha.
And all of the Russians.
Well, the Russians would make sense since they were in a tank and a plane crashed into the tank.
Yeah.
But anyways, everyone dies, and then some Lithuanian wannabe SSs come in.
Yeah.
And basically kidnap Hannibal
and his sister, and
Misha.
They plan on keeping them in case they need to use them as like a... like they could pretend like they rescued him or something, I believe.
But they end up using him as food.
Right.
And in the book, interesting enough, they already kidnapped another boy, so they eat the boy first and then eat Misha.
Yeah.
And then, so you don't actually know they ate Misha yet. You know they're going to do something with her. And then you just flash forward to 8 years later.
Right.
He's in a Soviet Union orphanage in his castle.
Old house, yeah. Which irony right there.
Yeah. Ooh.
Good twist.
Yeah, there's an amazing twist in this movie. And somehow he escapes and he goes to... And he crosses the wall.
Yeah, the Berlin Wall, like something that nobody else in the fucking world can do.
But... No, it happens, but they don't go right for the fucking guard tower.
Yeah, he actually used the guard tower to get over it.
Yeah, so... You know, Hannibal's just that cool. And then he gets to France and goes to his uncle's house, who's dead, and the uncle was married to a Japanese,
hot-ass Japanese.
Yeah, her tits though look a little low in one of the scenes. Like she had like a 5 foot fucking like neck and like chest, and then her boobs. It was real weird.
Yeah,
it could have just been the clothes she was wearing. Yeah. And then again, I'm not an expert on Japanese tits, but and then basically a bunch of nonsense happens. He gets trained in the Buddhist way of life, a
samurai and shit.
Yeah, it's kind of like, okay, women weren't allowed to learn that kind of shit. No, it's the truth, though. Yeah, I mean,
I know. That's funny, though.
And but somehow she's an expert martial artist, an expert swordsman, and or swordswoman. And basically, you go to his first kill, which is Paul Muham or whatever the fucking name was. It was a butcher.
Yeah, this ridiculous character of a butcher.
Yeah.
That, like, he first starts fucking with Hannibal's aunt and says that her vagina runs sideways.
Yeah.
Which I've heard was true, but...
I've heard that, too.
But it pisses Hannibal off, and he beats the shit out of the guy.
Yeah.
Almost kills him. And then he follows him to where he's going to be fishing, and then in this sort of drawn-out scene, cuts him up, and then...
Cuts his head off.
Slices his head off.
Which I thought that...
It worked.
Yeah.
It was the goriest part of the movie.
Yeah. I don't know. It wasn't Hannibal, though.
Yeah,
I mean, Hannibal's not going to do it.
It wasn't at all.
Hannibal will just outsmart you and then kill you.
That's pretty much the theme of this whole movie, is that there's some things that are cool and would be cool in another story, but within the continuity of this story, Hannibal Lecter makes no sense.
Yeah, and he's somehow, after he kills and he gets into medical school, and then that's where
he is the youngest person ever to be accepted to this particular medical school, and then somehow over the course of like a day becomes the head of the medical school, it looks like.
It was just, you get to stay and preserve bodies for the net.
Yeah, I guess, whatever.
I don't know, it was kind of, and then all of a sudden he found out about truth serum.
Yeah.
He's a huge medical guy, and like you said, he's ahead of
this
humongous hospital, and he's never heard of truth serum. And then he finds out about it. He's like, oh, so he finds out the truth about, well, what you were led to believe was the truth.
Yes.
And that, so he now he knows who. He remembers that one of the scenes is the guys that kidnapped him and his Misha, his sister. He knew that there's dog tags in his old cottage, so he goes back, gets the dog
sort
tags.
Of, that's been the theme of his whole life, is he keeps sort of having these flashbacks where he can almost see the guys that kidnapped him and his sister, and as we find out, ate his sister.
Yeah.
But he just can't do it, and then when he gets this truth serum, he's finally able to remember a few things.
Which... He could have just gone over under the watch by hypnosis, but I guess that might not have been around then. But they did have little portable cameras about the size of a quarter.
Yeah, that worked perfectly and got headshots from across the street back in 1950 or whatever.
Yeah, who knows when it was. But because there is the time continuation doesn't make any sense.
Not at all.
There's no saying, hey, we're now this forward. And basically what happens, he goes around and there's like five people or whatever that kidnapped him, and he goes around trying to kill each one. And
And does these really long, drawn-out things that would be much easier. It could much easier to torture and kill him if he wanted to, but he does sort of the James Bond villain thing where he does shit where it's really easy for them to get out of it.
Yeah. Because the real Hannibal doesn't do that, though.
No.
He just fucking kills you.
Yeah.
And then you basically... I'm going to ruin it for whoever, because I don't want to actually see this movie. So basically he goes and hunts down everyone, and then one of the main guys kidnaps his aunt, and it doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
And then so all he knows is he's got to go get his aunt, and he goes to his houseboat on the one of the canals. It's somewhere in France. I'm sure it's on the Seine River, but they never actually say.
Yeah.
Because it's in Fontainebleau, France, in case any of you go to France. But,
or live in France.
I guess this could be worldwide. This internets do go all over the place. Goddamn series of tubes. But, now I'm thinking about series of tubes.
He goes on the boat.
Yeah, there we go. He's on the boat, and then basically you find out he's going to go kill the guy, and the guy tells him, oh, you know, you ate your sister, too.
Yeah, the big reveal.
Yeah. Now, this is the part where I was expecting what was coming, was Hannibal would say, I know I ate my sister.
Yeah.
Because Hannibal is a psychopath. He just doesn't care.
Yeah.
How awesome would that have been?
He just there, been like, there we get, we actually finally, after fucking 2 hours of this bullshit, we actually get to the real character. But nope, we don't.
Nope. And then instead, he screams like a little bitch.
Yeah, cries like a little girl.
And says, no, 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 and then ends up killing.
And sweats a lot.
And his aunt saves him, and it's just kind of like...
His aunt, who he kind of has an incestuous relationship.
Well, it's not incest. Not really, but... Because they're not blood related. She's a Japanese princess, and he's a Lithuanian.
Still his aunt.
So?
Yeah, whatever. Okay, anyway.
But I wouldn't fuck my aunt. But, you know, he probably didn't even know his aunt.
But she was gongly, so I can give him that.
And then Hannibal was Gaspard Ulili?
Yes.
Is that how you actually say it?
Gaspard Ulili, probably.
Yeah. Who, I think the only way they try to make him seem scary is maybe his eyes are normally like that, but it looked like they just dilated his
eyes. It looked like contacts.
Yeah, contacts made him look real big.
Yeah, which... He was all right. I think, the right script, he could have pulled it off. He might have been the right person to do it, but the script was so terrible, we'll never know.
Well, it's not really a script, since...
Yeah, the adaptation, whatever. It was mainly a script, because the guy wrote the book just to be adapted, so...
I mean, it's not really like the guy... There was any problem with taking the book to the movie, since the book was made for the movies.
Right.
But... We ruined it for a reason. You probably shouldn't actually see this at all.
Don't bother. If you love the Hannibal series, this will only hurt it.
That's what I told my mother is, I mean, you can go out and rent it and watch it just for the Hannibal part, just so you could, because, you know, people like to do that.
But if you love Hannibal, this movie is only going to hurt that feeling that you get from the original movies, I think. I think it makes him a far weaker character.
Well, I just don't... I'm not going to accept that Hannibal Rising is an actual part of the...
Yeah, that's fine,
trilogy.
Too.
That's what I'm going for. I'm just...
If you want to see it and then pretend like it never existed, that's fine,
that's
too.
That's what I did, because it's like, huh.
Yeah.
Oh, never happened.
It really hurts. It hurts the story. It was made just for money, and you can tell.
Yeah. I mean, there's all these points where you could have a perfect Hannibal character. The only time, you know, you got this were on the little clip we played, the lie detector.
Yeah.
Is they could have just done stuff like that where he just
has
no
emotion.
Yeah, don't
get confused from that clip that we played that's how this character acts this whole movie, because it's not even close.
He shows way more emotion, and he doesn't show how... I mean, he's brilliant. That's what made it... He would just get in the mind, as we'll see in our next review of Manhunter. He gets in the mind of the police and really fucks him up.
Yeah.
And then he just goes around being crazy, but he's just too intelligent.
Yeah.
And he's really witty, too. Uh-huh. I just like at the end of Silence of the Lambs, he's like, well, I'm going to go have dinner with an old friend. And you can laugh. There was no lines in this movie where there's like you're foreshadowing.
Yeah.
The only foreshadowing is when they had the Chinese mask and he put it on and it was the same
and
leather
mask.
And that
was ridiculous, too, because in the context of the original Silence of the Lambs, it makes sense because that's what they put on fucking insane people that might eat your face.
Yeah.
But it doesn't make sense that the Chinese people would do that as like their warrior mask, and it's going to be the same mask he's going to wear years later.
Yeah, I was afraid for a second. I thought he was going to start wearing that mask around.
Yeah.
Luckily, he didn't. There's a whole lot of just, I mean, there's no point. It would have just been better if, like, what you assumed Hannibal. Hannibal had a good childhood. His parents died in the war.
Yeah.
And he just went on to be a normal person who was a psychopath. Uh-huh. He just had no feeling. This one, they try to add emotion, like he cared about his sister.
Yeah, try to give him a troubled past, and it hurts the whole story.
Yeah, because it had just been, you know, because he would have ate his sister just for the fun of it.
Right.
Yeah, and they really, really make that a lot more, him eating people, and the cheeks and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I mean, granted, he is Hannibal the Cannibal, but it seemed like it just wasn't as artistic as the other cannibal scenes.
Right.
Yeah. And I would just like to see someone get their brain fed to him.
Which was one of the few good scenes in Hannibal. Which wasn't a great movie, in my opinion. Some people really like it, but it was much better than this fucking movie.
Yeah, it was much better than this movie. And if for any of you out there who like to read, my mother's, who reads a lot, she said the book was pretty good, and she said the same thing about Hannibal. She said, if you want to watch Hannibal, is don't watch it, read the book, because it's one of the most disgusting books you'll ever read, is Hannibal. She said Hannibal Rising wasn't bad. And from the Wikipedia, it seemed like it made a lot more sense, and there was a lot more in it.
Yeah, that ties it to the original series. Okay, 1 out of 10, what would you give this one?
I don't know. It just doesn't register. I'm literally not. It's off. I've wiped. I have wiped.
Okay. It's not a movie.
It's not a movie.
I'm gonna give it a 1 just because Gong Li is in it and she's hot.
Well, and they did show her tits a lot. Not naked, but in Japanese.
She was really hot. Yeah. So anyway, that's our review of Hannibal Rising, and next a review of a good Hannibal movie, Manhunter.
You know who I am?
I don't want to know who you are.
According to you, I'm a sexual pervert. An animal, you said. You know who I am now?
Yes.
Do you feel privileged?
I'm very scared.
Open your eyes. Listen, as your reporter. Your job is to report. That's why you're here. And if you don't open your eyes, I'll staple your eyelids to your forehead. Well, here I am.
Now we're talking about Manhunter. This is the movie directed by Michael Mann from 1986, stars William Peterson, Brian Cox, and Tom Noonan. If you've ever seen the movie Red Dragon, which came out as the prequel to Silence of the Lambs, it was with Edward Norton. This is basically the same story, but it's the original adaptation of the novel Red Dragon.
Correct.
Yeah. It's basically, you know, the same story. The detective, Will Graham, who caught Hannibal Lecter, is brought back on another case where the police just cannot catch the serial killer known as the Tooth Fairy. And they need to bring him back on because he's the guy who can really get into the mindset of the killer and is able to finally track him down because he gets into their exact mindset.
Yeah, he actually becomes the killer.
This movie is very 80s.
Just a tad bit.
Well, all of the scenes with Will Graham and his wife and like in their house... Pretty much all the scenes with Will Graham.
What about that bed?
Very 80s. That whole room was just like the brightest blue color, and like they have all silk sheets. Yeah. It was like an 80s music video.
And they really should have, if I remember correctly, not had any light shine on the silk bed because you could really see the reflection a little too much.
Yeah. But pretty much all the scenes with Will Graham are very ridiculous. William Peterson, you'll know from TV show CSI, and I think he's a much better fit for a TV show. He feels like a TV actor to me. He overacts quite a bit in this movie.
Well, at the time, though, I mean, that's just because if you know him as Grissom,
right?
This movie doesn't work. That's my problem, because I think him as a Grissom, so yeah. He doesn't...
That's a good point. It might be different for people that saw this when it came out.
Yeah.
We're younger, and this movie came out the year I was born. So. Yeah,
and I also saw Red Dragon before I saw this.
That's true. That's true for me also.
Yeah, so it was kind of like, well, you're no Edward Norton, sir.
Yeah. You can't really review this movie without comparing it to Red Dragon because they are basically the same story. I think Ed Norton is a much better Will Graham, but I think Tom Noonan in this movie Manhunter is a much better Francis Dolarhyde.
I'd second that notion.
Tom Noonan really does a great job. He's extremely creepy. Looking at the guy and without the like effects work they did on him, he's a creepy ass dude. But with it, he was very uncomfortable, and he played it really well. And it's a shame that he's not doing as much anymore. Recently, he started doing some minor horror movies. He recently did The Roost, or a really low budget independent movie, but it was really good. But
I thought The Blind Lady did a better job in
Manhunter
than the original, the remake of Manhunter.
Yeah, that was Joan Allen. She's, I don't remember the characters she plays, but she's in all the Bourne movies. And we follow the story, this Tooth Fairy. We don't really see him for the first
50 minutes or so of the movie. I know, that was another good part
of the movie.
It's all William Graham and Brian Cox.
Yeah, Brian Cox plays Hannibal Lecter, and we all know Anthony Hopkins as Hannibal Lecter, but Brian Cox really does pull it off.
Yeah, he's the original.
Yeah,
since it came out before Silence of the Lambs.
Yeah, and if you haven't seen this movie, you think of Anthony Hopkins as Hannibal Lecter, and you think he made that character perfect, but really, Brian Cox did it years earlier, and he played it.
Yeah. I mean, you wouldn't notice a difference.
You can see that Anthony Hopkins got a lot of his character from Brian Cox.
Yeah, and like you wouldn't, there's really, I mean, of course there's a difference, but if you just want to not get too technical, I mean, there's no difference between
two actors. I think Hannibal Lecter, I think Anthony Hopkins did a little bit more demented, just in the eyes. Anthony Hopkins' eyes, I think.
In every movie, Anthony Hopkins does.
And I think that really helped the character a lot. I think, at least for me, eyes play a big part in actors, is, you know.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Well, this was like good old Joe Spinelli. I thought his eyes throughout the whole movie
were
great, how he could change between when he knew he was insane and normal.
Yeah.
And Anthony Hopkins is just a creepy, creepy guy.
Yes. And basically, Will Graham starts piecing aspects of the story together. But as he does, he falls into the same trap he did with Hannibal Lecter, where he's becoming more and more like the actual guy.
Yeah, and Hannibal, or Brian Cox in this case, points that out, keeps warning him, you know.
Yeah.
Because that's why he had to retire, because he had a nervous breakdown, because he had actually all the thoughts.
Yeah, he was in an insane asylum for a little while, because he couldn't get the killer mindset out of his head.
So, hell, should we just fast forward to the end?
Okay.
Because, I mean,
We don't want to ruin this movie, though, but there is a climax where Will Graham and Francis Dolarhyde do finally meet.
Yeah.
And it's pretty obvious how it's all going to go down, but
there's
a big climax that's kind of ridiculous in the way that Will Graham handles it, because he's actually a really terrible cop.
Yeah.
He got a couple people killed, but because he decided to handle it all himself and did it in the worst way possible.
It was a typical, it's the same thing with goddamn Miami Vice.
Yeah, Michael Mann, who did the Miami Vice show, you can see that he wasn't quite out of that mindset yet when he did this movie. Because
it's just like Don Johnson will just, he would do all. That's all you need is Don Johnson.
Diving through a plate glass window.
Yeah.
And then the music is pretty terrible in this movie. But I think it's definitely worth seeing if you like Red Dragon at all, or you want to see it a little bit more disturbing.
Yeah, I guess you got it in the psychological part of you, because that's what at the end, to me, this is how I take it, you don't know if William Graham is ever left the mindset, because he goes to the house and asks if they're okay, and then you're like, huh, and then just the movie kind of ends like that.
Yeah.
Well, they go back to his house, and
he grabs the woman, Reba, who was Francis's, you know, girlfriend, and sort of embraces her, and you think maybe he's in the exact same mindset as Francis.
Yeah, that's what the movie, this one is more psychological based than any others. There's no real
this
shocking.
Yeah, it's not really a horror movie. Yeah. Not like any of the Hannibal movies really are horror movies. Maybe Hannibal itself, the movie, was, but they're all more of a psychological thriller.
This one's more of a, as IMBD calls it, a crime movie.
Yeah, that's fair. But it definitely has some horror elements, and there's some very disturbing parts in the movie.
Yeah.
Tom Noonan, I can't say enough about, really did. He was creepy as hell, just looking at the guy.
It was, he did a lot better job than.
Yeah.
I mean, one of the things is, in Red Dragon, they focus on the tattoo a lot, and you don't ever see the tattoo in Manhunter, even though they do release it, and like, you see, the tattoo was on the front, and they were going to do the tattoo.
Yeah.
But they decided that would be too distracting from Tom Noonan's creepiness.
Yeah.
Which is a wise choice.
Uh-huh.
And then with Red Dragon, the guy is not all that creepy, so you just had to try to make him and try to add a backstory.
Yeah. I think Red Dragon is much more of a thriller, and this is a thriller, but it has more horror overtones.
Yeah. I think what made Red Dragon for me was Edward Norton.
Edward Norton, yeah.
Because he was so intense.
Yeah.
And this one was the exact opposite. There's just no true intensity. It was just kind of like a guy was struggling with his mindset, where Edward Norton was just one angry, angry guy.
Yeah.
And I just like how Red Dragon ends. It ends on a much better note.
Yes.
Because it goes totally insane. Edward Norton yelling at his kid for being a fucking pansy, for pissing his pants. And then all that. And it just, and then the beginning was better too, because you got into Hannibal more.
Right, yeah.
This one, you don't understand how they just kind of mention, oh, yeah, by the way.
He's really an afterthought.
Yeah. Brian Cox is in it for like 10 minutes, yes. It seems like.
But, I mean, he pulled it off enough where they gave him the whole movie, even though they didn't give it to Brian Cox. They gave Hannibal was a strong enough character in this movie that they gave him his own movie.
Yeah.
So
that's a whole book series, though.
Yeah, I know. But I'm saying that that character was strong enough. But anyway, that's pretty much all we have for Manhunter. What would you give it 1 out of 10?
I'd give it probably a 6.5.
Yeah, I'd give it maybe... Yeah, 6.5, 7, somewhere around there.
Well, since we talked about Red Dragon probably more than Manhunter, what would you give Red Dragon?
Red Dragon? See, this is, as a horror movie, maybe 4 or 5, but it just as a movie in itself, movie that I enjoy watching, 7.5 probably.
I'd probably give the same thing for a movie. A horror movie wasn't much. And might as well end round it out. What about Silence of the Lambs?
Silence? I mean, as a horror movie, once again, probably a 6 or so.
Yeah.
As an actual movie, 9 probably.
I'd go give it a 10.
Yeah. I mean, it is a fantastic movie, and it's one of only 3 movies to ever sweep the Oscars. It won Best Director, Best Film, Best Actor, and Best Actress, and Best Screenplay. One of only 3 ever to do it. So, I mean, for a horror movie, I mean, it wasn't a true horror movie, but
I think it would...
a movie about cannibalism.
Yeah.
To sweep the Oscars, you have to give it credit there.
I think it would be a horror movie just because it, to me, a horror movie is something where you have to be disturbed by it.
Right.
And there's not much more disturbing than Anthony Hopkins. Yeah. And I guess Hannibal, I would give that like a 4 just so we could round it out.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. I really didn't enjoy Hannibal. Honestly, I need to rewatch it because I haven't seen it in a long time, but I remember not enjoying it. So I'm not going to rate that one.
I'm just going through the memory.
Yeah, I haven't seen it in so long.
So, because this was supposed to be a Hannibal weekend, might as well do all the Hannibal movies.
Yeah.
So.
Okay, that's pretty much all of our reviews for this week. We didn't get any phone calls or messages. If you want to contact us, we'll have that at the end in a second. But I wanted to just thank real quick a guy named Dark Pumpkin on the Friday the 13th message board. I Googled Bloodlust Horrorcast, and I saw that he had listed us as one of his favorite podcasts, and I thought that was cool, so thanks for that. We want to thank the PodSafe Music Network for supplying the music. The opening band was All That Remains with their song This Calling. You can visit them at allthatremainsonline.com.
Are they still on tour?
They are on tour now. They're playing St. Louis tomorrow, which I can't go. I'm going to try and catch a show in Chicago. The middle band you heard was 2 West with their song Dried Advance. You can check them out at myspace.com/2WestNation and be sure to watch that video with the effects work by Jim. Do you want to give them contact info?
I might as well. You can call us at 206-666-2246. Once again, 206-666-2246. You can email us at bloodlosthorrorcast@gmail.com. I don't know why I said us. You can email the guy to my left. You can visit us at bloodlosthorrorcast.com, or you can go to our MySpace at myspace.com/bloodlosthorrorcast. That's about it. You can vote us at podcastalley.com, dig.com, and where's the podcast pickle?
Oh, it's mainly for podcasters. It doesn't seem like most people that listen to us are podcasters, so... I mean, if you want to go to Podcast Pickle and add us as one of your favorites, that would be helpful too, but it's not as big of a deal.
And you want to leave us a
review on iTunes.
We
would appreciate it. We don't have any, and it's cool, I guess. So if you want to leave us a review on iTunes, that would be helpful. And if you go to bloodlusthorrorcast.com and add yourself as a fan, it would be helpful because it helps us in our rankings, and we kind of got fucked over where they deleted some of our fans. So
I noticed because we dropped pretty low. We're doing
I know.
So good.
I added ourselves as a fan because you can do that, and then they fucking deleted all of our other fans, and it's bullshit. Yeah. So, but whatever, Podomatic is cool other than that.
I should say that since that's where we're at.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well,
what's on tap for next week so we can do a foreshadowing?
I'm not sure what exactly we're doing next week. I don't believe there's any new horror movies coming out to theaters, so...
Unfortunately not. There is some limited release coming out, but it's not for us.
If I get a chance to see Pan's Labyrinth, we may have a review of that. I'll try to keep it short since it's not really a true horror movie, but...
Everyone says it's pretty amazing.
Yeah, but other than that, once I figure out what we're doing, I'll post it. I'll send a bulletin out through our MySpace page. Remember to go vote on our MySpace page for the horror tournament. And that's about it for this week. Thank you very much for listening.
Have a good day.